This podcast examines how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. I'm your host, Caitlin Hatch, creative polymath and dedicated consumer of Dharma talks, Dharma books, self-help books, and just generally the wisdom of others. I believe in the importance of showing gratitude, and the greatest way for me to do that is to share the tools, tips, and teachings of others that I've found immensely beneficial, which is why I started this podcast. My intention is to provide tools, ideas, and contemplations to benefit anyone who wants to listen, because life is workable and totally awesome. Today, I'm going to begin by sharing one of the most profound, genuine, honest descriptions of love that I have ever encountered. It comes from researcher Carla McLaren from her audiobook, The Language of Emotions. I bought this from Sounds True ages ago. I haven't listened to it in years. I really highly recommend it. It's brilliant. But much of what she shared has really stuck with me, regardless of having not listened to it for a long time. And I particularly loved what she had to say about love, which was this. Emotions and desires can come and go as they please, and circumstances can change in startling ways. But real love never wavers. Real love endures all emotions and all moods, and it survives trauma, betrayal, divorce, and even death. The truth about love is this. Love is constant, only the names change. And then she goes on to clarify a little bit further on. I can be furious with people I love, frightened of them, and utterly disappointed in them. But the love never wavers. If my loved ones are too damaged or disillusioned, I don't stay with them, but I don't stop loving them. Carla is sharing this description of love to clarify what emotions are, which is what she's talking about in this audiobook. Just like I so enjoy describing what something isn't in order to point out what it is, which is what she's doing with this definition of love. In this case, Carla is describing something that isn't an emotion, love, in order to point out how we can discern what emotions are and how they're communicating things to us and what they're communicating to us. So I went to the dictionary and looked it up, and dictionary definition of love says that it can be an emotion or it can be a virtue. So in Carla's description, she's describing it as a virtue. As an emotion, love is kind of light. It's fleeting, it's based on preferences, and it's usually directed towards things like, I love this shirt or I love sushi. In this context, we're saying that we derive pleasure or enjoyment from something. We're not stating that we have a strong commitment or connection to it. In Carla's description, she specifies real love. As a Buddhist, the term real doesn't really jive for me, so I'm going to use genuine love when I talk about, while I talk about it. To be very precise, I could even say unconditional love. There is a general assumption that the love a parent has for a child is unconditional. Most of us are taught that this is so, or at the very least, society puts a general impression that this should be so. But I don't think that unconditional love is a default response. In my experience, unconditional love is something that we cultivate. I feel incredibly fortunate to have been raised by parents who demonstrated what unconditional love looks like. I can honestly say, if my parents have or have ever had any hopes or expectations or fixed ideas about how they wanted my brother and me to live our lives, I haven't the foggiest idea what they may be. If anything, the only expectation I have ever felt from my parents was for us to cultivate our individuality, to think for ourselves, be curious and imaginative, and not let the ideas of others or society keep us from being who we are. Effectively, they've always communicated very strongly that they want us to do what makes us happy, not what would make them happy. And I have never felt like anything that I've chosen to do with my life or would choose to do with my life would result in my parents loving me less. In fact, to try and measure unconditional love or genuine love is impossible. Genuine, lasting love like that means no matter what, which also means that there are not degrees to it. So, like, how we may have a favorite sweater or a favorite t-shirt, but, like, say we love the sweater more for various reasons. Well, unconditional love can't and doesn't work that way. If you can measure your love, then it's not unconditional. As soon as we put measurements to it, it means that we have expectations of what about a person is worthy of love. It means that we're balancing out our preferences for certain behaviors with our dislike or aversion to other behaviors. I want to establish a working definition because love, genuine unconditional love, is really incredibly powerful. And I want to avoid sentimentality with this. I find that I often come up against a lot of dismissiveness towards things like love or joy or happiness. Like, talking about these things is seen as fluffy and hippie woo. I dislike woo, as you will know from a previous episode, Learn to Discern. Woo is unhelpful, as it can absolve people of responsibility, it makes impossible promises, generally, and it also encourages ignorance. As a Buddhist, ignorance is like the single biggest thing I'm working to expunge from my life. To understand genuine love, to cultivate it and recognize our ability for it is immensely beneficial. And also, from personal experience, it's eminently practical. On a very base level, if we just look at the very fact that human beings are pack animals, right? We can appreciate the importance of having the strong connection of love with and for others. It allows for us to care for the well-being of others. So, for example, if it wasn't for love, we wouldn't have cancer treatments. We wouldn't have vaccines. We wouldn't have any medical advancements. Love is powerful. But unfortunately, love is also very misunderstood, which is why I'm going to so much depth about describing it and defining it. It's why I appreciate how Carla McLaren explains it, because we can love someone, but also recognize that we need to let them go, that it's not healthy for them to be in our life for some time, or even forever sometimes. We don't stop loving people when they hurt us. If we do, then what we had for them wasn't genuine love. It was like an extreme liking love. It was an emotive love. It wasn't a virtue love. In which case, it was nothing to do with the person and everything to do with our own preferences, our own likes, and our own dislikes. When we love people in a measurable way, or we can measure it, it causes a lot of harm. Unfortunately, though, most of us don't have good examples of unconditional love. I realize that I'm really fortunate. So we do look at love from an emotional standpoint. We've been raised in communities that taught us that good, virtuous children are lovable and naughty, bad children are not. That when we act and behave in certain ways, we are worthy of love, and when we act in other ways, we are not worthy of love. So many of you might know this, I'm an artist, and for the past 7 years, as long as I've been meditating pretty much and studying Buddhist teachings, I've also been creating what has now turned into the Dharma series. There are a lot of paintings and drawings that I've made where I take a teaching and I study it and explore it, and then I rewrite it in my own words and share it through imagery, through paintings and drawings. And the second Dharma piece that I ever did was exploring genuine love through examining one of the first teachings of the Buddha and one of my favorite teachings of the Buddha, which, to paraphrase, is you can search the entire universe, but you will find no one more worthy of your own love and affection than yourself. We are worthy of love. Every single one of us is worthy of love. You can test this if you want, and I encourage you to do so, as I always do. And I know that there are people who would argue against me, just for the sake of argument. Why we do anything for the sake of argument is slightly baffling. I might have to do an entire episode on that, but when you really consider what that means, I mean, why would you want to advocate for the devil? Exactly. I'm confused. So, let's not approach it as an argument, so much as approach it as something for us to really examine and question. Here's a good question. Why would someone want to argue that they don't deserve love, especially their own? I can speak to my own experience on this, because I didn't used to think that I was worthy of love. When I was younger and I was really struggling with mental illness on and off, and by the time that I had developed panic disorder and everything, I really didn't think that I was worthy of love because I felt like, well, A, there was something wrong with me for being depressed when I was a rather privileged white Western girl. B, I was obviously selfish and whiny. And selfish, whiny people are bad. Therefore, I was bad and I deserved no love for that. And C, I should just shape up and get over myself, and love is soft and kind and fluffy and not going to help that. All of this changed for me drastically when I started seeing a psychologist and she confronted me with the question that I just asked, why don't you think you're worthy of love? So I had to really examine the fact that I didn't, which was not something that I'd examined at all at that point. And if I had been asked outright, if I felt that I was unworthy of love and why, I wouldn't necessarily have been able to give a reason because it hadn't even really occurred to me that I felt that way, beyond saying that, well, I feel like I'm really messed up. In my episode of Everything is Workable called Being Human, I talk about the importance of learning to see our messed upness as part of what makes us human. By thinking I wasn't worthy of love because I experienced depression or had a lot of anxiety on a regular basis meant that I didn't love that I was human. I wanted to totally reject my humanness, as if I could be some perfect divine being completely untouched or unaffected by what I deemed as negative emotions that need to be gotten rid of. As it is, all these messed up things about ourselves that we think deem us unworthy of love are actually the very things that deem us worthy of it. Without love, we hold ourselves and others to impossible, unachievable, unrealistic standards. We expect that we can always be 100% in everything we do. No wonder the world is rampant with anxious, stressed out people. Of course, the next argument that I'm usually presented with is, well, some people are just bad. Are you honestly saying psychopathic murderers are worthy of love? Well, yes, actually, that's exactly what I'm saying. Because love isn't a measure of personality or ethics. Love is something you either have or we don't. It's a sense of connection and understanding and care that is unwavering. In the book, We Need to Talk About Kevin, which was made into a film, and I've not seen the film, so I don't know how it was adapted, but I have read the book, so what I'm saying is based on reading the book. I mean, lots of people think this book is just a commentary on the mentality in the States that leads to the high rate of gun violence, and specifically to school shootings. And obviously an element of the book is very much a commentary on that, but the way that I see it, this book is actually a commentary on love. Because the main character, a mother, doesn't feel the love that is so often described by parents as having, like, that they have towards their children. Like, for her, it isn't an instantaneous connection, it's not really strong. From the moment her son is born, she feels sort of a cold distance from him, a sense of disconnect, and it runs through the entire thread of the narrative. But ultimately, she does love her son, because in the end, despite everything, she continues to be there for him. She may not particularly like him, she may even be afraid of him and hurt by his actions, but she cares for his humanity. That's unconditional love. Love does not condone poor behavior. It allows for the fullness of a human being, that no one is just one way, and while someone may have murdered someone else or someone may have raped someone, and we may want to define them by these single acts, they are also human beings who are just as confused and messed up as the rest of us, and hating them, cultivating animosity or anger, doesn't help anyone. It just doesn't. Hatred shuts us down to others. It puts up walls and barriers. It hardens our minds and it shuts us down to life. Hatred is at the root of fundamentalism, of needing to be right in such a way that someone else has to be wrong. It limits people to the labels that we give them, and it makes our world a very small, dark, and terrifying place. It also creates fear in ourselves towards our own flaws. More of that expecting ourselves to be 100% all the time, right? If we deem certain things so bad and unforgivable that we direct hatred towards them, then how do we see ourselves when we see those things in ourselves? What does that mean about us? I want to advocate for love. Love is the ultimate antidote for aggression. In the description of this podcast, I've provided a link to a video of Dr. Maya Angelou in which she says, "Love liberates." Not only does love lead to a desire for us to create a better world in general, it also affects each of us on a very deeply personal level. When we cultivate love for ourselves and others, we take the approach that we are worthy of it, and we can touch into something bigger than the tiny world of our ego clinging. We can see that love itself is powerful, it's a connector, and it's limitless. Thank you so much for listening to Everything is Workable. My content will always be free, but if you'd like to help make it even better, you can become a patron by clicking the green button at the top of the page. I'm always looking for content suggestions and people to interview. If you've got any ideas or would like to contribute, you can get in touch through my website, www.faunawolfcreations.com. That's faunawolfcreations.com. Thank you to the very talented Dexter Britton for sharing his music with the world. The music used in this podcast is from his Creative Commons Volume 5 album, available on www.dexterbritton.co.uk.